been listening to Aaron Wilder speaking about his music. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
U.S. Foreign policy has been aggressive, and now we have serious dangers on two fronts. The war in Ukraine, which is devastating, and the dangers with potential confrontation with China. We have to rethink our foreign policy.
As the war in Ukraine enters its 7th month and U.S.-China tensions rise over Taiwan, we speak to economist Jeffrey Sachs about what he calls the West's false narrative about Russia and China. Plus, a year ago today, the last U.S. plane evacuated Afghanistan. We look at the crisis facing Afghan refugees. Over the last year, the U.S. has approved only 123 Afghan humanitarian parole applications. Meanwhile, the U.S. has approved applications from 68,000 Ukrainians in recent months. And we'll talk to the 25-year-old gun control activist, Maxwell Alejandro Frost, who appears headed to Congress after winning last week's Democratic primary in Florida.
I confronted Governor DeSantis on ending gun violence. And what did he say?
Nobody wants to hear from you.
I'm Maxwell Alejandro Frost, and I've been making sure they hear from us for 10 years. Protecting the right to choose. Passing laws to end gun violence. If we want bold change on guns, reproductive health, and affordable housing, we can't keep electing the same politicians.
And today, President Biden calls for an assault weapons ban. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Iraq, at least 30 people are dead and hundreds more injured after fighting intensified in the capital, Baghdad, between supporters and opponents of the powerful Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. The violence came after al-Sadr's announcement Monday he's quitting politics. Gunshots and rocket fire erupted overnight as Iraqi security forces, Iran-backed militias and supporters of al-Sadr clashed in Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone, an area that houses Iraq's parliament and foreign embassies.
Before, we were committed to the orders of Muqtada al-Sadr. Now he took his hand away from us. He withdrew from politics. He is letting the people take the lead in their own revolution. We are not going back. We will die here. We're ready to die. We have nothing to lose.
The formation of a new Iraqi government's been paralyzed since parliamentary elections in October, where al-Sadr's Sadrist movement won the most seats but failed to win an outright majority. Al-Sadr's supporters had occupied the Iraqi parliament since late July in an effort to block lawmakers from choosing a new prime minister. Pakistan's government has launched a major appeal for international aid after unprecedented monsoon rains fueled by the climate crisis swept away homes and bridges, destroyed crops, displaced tens of millions of people, killed over 1,000. On Monday, Pakistan's climate minister, Sherry Raymond, declared, "It is climate dystopia at our doorstep."
One-third of Pakistan is underwater, and 33 million are affected. Please tell me how that is not catastrophic. That is the size of a small country.
Pakistan's planning minister estimated the cost of rebuilding at over $10 billion and said that figure is likely to rise once rescue crews are able to access remote areas cut off by floodwaters. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves has declared a state of emergency in the capital, Jackson, and will mobilize the National Guard after torrential rains caused the Pearl River to overtop its banks, flooding a water treatment plant. Governor Reeves said Monday evening emergency workers are scrambling to deliver potable water to 180,000 people around Jackson who lack enough water to flush toilets or fight fires.
Please stay safe. Do not drink the water. In too many cases, it is raw water from the reservoir being pushed through the pipes.
It's the latest crisis to impact aging infrastructure in Jackson, where officials estimate the cost of fixing the city's water system could top $2 billion. In early 2021, Jackson residents spent more than a month under boil water orders after winter storms caused pipes and water mains to burst. 82% of Jackson's residents are Black. A new study finds Greenland's melting ice sheet will likely contribute almost a foot to global sea level rise by the end of the century. Writing in the journal Nature Climate Change, researchers found even if the world were to halt all greenhouse gas emissions today, rising levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide have already doomed 120 trillion tons of Greenland's ice to melt. Without urgent action to mitigate the damage, researchers warn the amount of sea level rise could be far higher. Here in New York, a fifth round of talks aimed at protecting the world's marine wildlife has ended in failure. On Saturday, negotiations on an updated United Nations Ocean Treaty ended without an agreement after wealthy countries, including the U.S. and Canada, rejected a plan to establish marine protected areas spanning 30% of the world's oceans. Ukraine has launched a counteroffensive aimed at retaking the city of Kherson and other parts of southern Ukraine occupied by Russia. On Monday, Ukraine's military said it had broken through Russia's first line of defense and that Russian proxy forces and paratroopers had fled the battlefield. Russia acknowledged the counteroffensive but claimed it had failed and that Ukraine has suffered heavy losses. Meanwhile, a team of inspectors with the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency have arrived in Kyiv ahead of their planned visit to the Russian-occupied Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, Europe's largest nuclear power station. Fighting continues to rage near the site with reports of artillery fire and a missile strike overnight. New satellite images show damage from an artillery attack on the roof of a building right next to Zaporizhzhia's six nuclear reactors. President Biden will ask Congress to approve $1.1 billion in arms sales to Taiwan. That's according to Politico, which reports the weapons deal will include 60 Harpoon anti-ship missiles and 100 air-to-air missiles for Taiwan's U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets. The planned weapons sales come after China staged large-scale military war games around Taiwan in response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to the island. A federal judge has recommended against efforts by victims of the September 11th attacks to seize $3.5 billion from Afghanistan's central bank. After the Taliban regained power last year, the Biden administration froze $7 billion in Afghanistan's foreign reserves and then set aside half the money for 9/11 families who sued the Taliban. But some 9/11 families have opposed such efforts. Layla Murphy is with the group September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrow. She said, quote, "I'm relieved the judge has taken a step toward the only legally and morally correct approach, making the entire $7 billion available to Afghans to deal with the economic crisis we helped cause," she said. The Biden administration's announced it can no longer provide U.S. residents with free COVID-19 home tests, blaming congressional Republicans for blocking the passage of more COVID relief funds that would allow tests to be stockpiled. Public health advocates have warned this could add to a surge of COVID infections during the fall and winter. Since January, the government has mailed some 600 million tests through a program that allowed households to request a total of 16 home tests. People now have until Friday to make their final order on the federal online portal. Moderna sued Pfizer, claiming the company illegally used mRNA technology patented by Moderna to develop its COVID-19 vaccine. The two companies have made record profits off the vaccine. Pfizer's projected $32 billion in COVID vaccine sales this year, while Moderna's forecasting at least $19 billion in sales. Tim Bierley of the group Global Justice Now said in response to Moderna's lawsuit, quote, "It's grotesque but unsurprising to see pharma fighting among themselves over who has the right to profiteer the most from the pandemic," unquote. Many public health campaigners have argued the vaccine should be publicly owned since billions of dollars in public funding helped develop them. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has sentenced 40-year-old Joshua Pruitt to 55 months in prison, followed by 3 years of supervised release over his role in the Capitol insurrection. Pruitt's an aspiring member of the far-right Proud Boys organization, who was among the first to push past police lines and into the Capitol crypt January 6, 2021. Prosecutors say Pruitt came face-to-face with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer during the attack on Congress. Video of the incident shows Schumer and his security team turning and running in the opposite direction after they saw Pruitt approaching. In Georgia, the judge overseeing the grand jury probe into Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election has rejected a bid by Republican Governor Brian Kemp to quash a subpoena for his testimony. However, the Fulton County Superior Court judge ruled Monday that Kemp will not have to testify until after November's midterm elections, where he faces Democratic challenger Stacey Abrams. The special grand jury was requested by Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis earlier this year. Last week, Willis sought grand jury subpoenas for Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and former Trump legal advisor Sidney Powell. And in Oregon, a 20-year-old gunman wielding a semi-automatic assault rifle and a shotgun opened fire inside a Safeway grocery store in the city of Bend Sunday, killing two people before taking his own life. Witnesses say one of the victims, 66-year-old Safeway worker Donald Ray Surratt, likely saved the lives of many by confronting and attacking the gunman. In Texas, a federal judge has struck down a state law that banned adults under the age of 21 from carrying a gun, arguing the statute violated the Second Amendment. The ruling came just 3 months after an 18-year-old gunman killed 19 children and two teachers at Robb Elementary School in the city of Uvalde, Texas's deadly school shooting. The lawsuit was filed last November by the Firearms Policy Coalition. In related news in Austin, dozens of gun control advocates, including the families and loved ones of victims of the Uvalde mass shooting, rallied outside the Texas state capitol over the weekend, demanding the state raise the minimum age to purchase an AR-15 to 21 years old. This is Maggie Morales, whose sister, Ava Morales, was one of the teachers killed at Robb Elementary in May.
These weapons belong in the military. They belong in the war, not in the classroom. My sister did not have to die for this. It was too easy for this punk to buy these weapons and easily do what he did because of the laws that are in place. These laws should have changed a long time ago.
Today, President Biden is going to Pennsylvania, where he's calling on Congress to pass a federal ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Biden's also requesting more money for police as part of what the White House calls its Safer America plan. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, Politico is reporting the Biden administration is preparing to ask Congress to approve a new $1.1 billion arms sale to Taiwan. The package reportedly includes 60 anti-ship missiles, 100 air-to-air missiles. This comes after two U.S. warships sailed through the Taiwan Straits Sunday for the first time since House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan earlier this month. China condemned the visit and launched major military drills near Taiwan. Meanwhile, President Biden announced $3 billion in more military aid for Ukraine last week, including money for missiles, artillery rounds and drones to help Ukrainian forces fight Russia. We begin today's show looking at U.S. policy on Russia and China. We're joined by the economist Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University. He's president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. He served as advisor to three UN secretaries general. His latest article is headlined, "The West's False Narrative About Russia and China." He begins the article by writing, quote, "The world is on the edge of nuclear catastrophe in no small part because of the failure of Western political leaders to be forthright about the causes of the escalating global conflicts. The relentless Western narrative that the West is noble while Russia and China are evil is simple-minded and extraordinarily dangerous, Jeffrey Sachs writes. Jeffrey Sachs, welcome to Democracy Now! Why don't you take it there?
Good to be with you.
What is the story that people in the West and around the world should understand about what's happening right now with these conflicts, with Russia and Ukraine, and with China?
The main point, Amy, is that we are not using diplomacy. We are using weaponry. This sale now announced to Taiwan that you've been discussing this morning is just another case in point. This does not make Taiwan safer. This does not make the world safer. It certainly doesn't make the United States safer. This goes back a long way. I think it's useful to start 30 years ago. The Soviet Union ended, and some American leaders got it into their head that there was now what they called the unipolar world, that the U.S. was the sole superpower, and we could run the show. The results have been disastrous. We have had now three decades of militarization of American foreign policy. A new database that Tufts is maintaining has just shown that there have been more than 100 military interventions by the United States since 1991. It's really unbelievable. And I have seen in my own experience over the last 30 years working extensively in Russia, in Central Europe, in China, and in other parts of the world, how the U.S. approach is a military first and often a military only approach. We arm who we want. We call for NATO enlargement, no matter what other countries say may be harmful to their security interests. We brush aside anyone else's security interests. And when they complain, we ship more armaments to our allies in that region. We go to war when we want, where we want, whether it was Afghanistan or Iraq or the covert war against Assad in Syria, which is even today not properly understood by the American people, or the war in Libya. And we say, we're peace-loving. What's wrong with Russia and China? They are so warlike. They're out to undermine the world. And we end up in terrible confrontations. The war in Ukraine, just to finish the introductory view, could have been avoided and should have been avoided through diplomacy. What President Putin of Russia was saying for years was, do not expand NATO into the Black Sea, not to Ukraine, much less to Georgia, which if people look on the map, straight across to the eastern edge of the Black Sea. Russia said, this will surround us. This will jeopardize our security. Let us have diplomacy. The United States rejected all diplomacy. I tried to contact the White House at the end of 2021. In fact, I did contact the White House and said, there will be war unless the U.S. enters diplomatic talks with President Putin over this question of NATO enlargement. I was told the U.S. will never do that. That is off the table. And it was off the table. Now we have a war that's extraordinarily dangerous, and we are taking exactly the same tactics in East Asia that led to the war in Ukraine. We're organizing alliances, building up weaponry, trash-talking China, having Speaker Pelosi fly to Taiwan when the Chinese government said, please lower the temperature, lower the tensions. We say, no, we do what we want, and now send more arms. This is a recipe for yet another war. And to my mind, it's terrifying. We are at the 60th anniversary of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which I've studied all my life, and I've written about. I've written a book about the aftermath. We are driving to the precipice, and we are filled with our enthusiasm as we do so. And it's just unaccountably dangerous and wrongheaded, the whole approach of U.S. foreign policy, and it's bipartisan.
This is Chard Chenier, and you're listening to the New Spins Library on CKUT.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be at risk of isolated thundershowers all day. The high will be 22 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be partly sunny with a high of 19 degrees Celsius. Friday will be mainly sunny with a high of 22 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring a mix of sun and clouds, becoming sunny in the afternoon. The high will be 26 degrees Celsius. Sunday will have a low chance of a shower in the morning, then sunny in the afternoon. The high will be 20 degrees Celsius. Monday, there will be a few clouds in the sky, giving way to sunshine for most of the day. The high will be 20 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday will be partly sunny in the morning with a chance of showers in the afternoon. The high will be 23 degrees Celsius.
And all the things that you know. You don't belong here, those eyes for an ocean view
and the moon.
And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo.
Taboo.
We always chase sunsets to settle on the stars and moon.
And the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through. We are the same, baby. Pray for love, yeah. Sunsets in May remind me way more of us, yeah. What's more to say when I've been out different state? Hope I can show you I made it out. Can't hold me down. You told me hold my hand. Just follow me, I'll show you golden land. And diamond water for a hopeless man. And all these things that you know, I know, I know. You said you don't belong. Eyes for an ocean view
and the moon.
And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo.
Taboo.
We always chase sunsets to settle on the stars and moon.
And the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through. Always chasing this high, and all the pain in my eyes. Turn cold, December came by. Those storms don't ever break mine. Yeah, I was told to make it right. King of my city, frame white. You held it down, don't break light. I learned these things take time. Just take time. Hold my hand, I'll change your life. We both made plans, don't fade alive tonight. And tonight, you said you don't belong. Eyes for an ocean view
and the moon, and the moon.
And we California dreaming from a city where that's so taboo.
Taboo.
We always chase sunsets, but settle on the stars and moon.
And the moon, and the moon.
And if I tell you about me, I hope you tell me what you've been through.
Time sinks in his dreams. drowning head, 'cause he knows he made the mistake. He thinks, will she look at me with those eyes that looked at me for the very first time? Will she ever kiss me again and be a lover and best friend? A burning heart can be a mystery. He knows he has to do something more. He thinks, hey, I've got the key, I'll hold the rose at her door. He says, will you look at me with those eyes that looked at me for the very first time? Will you ever kiss me again and be a lover and best friend?
Show, and that's how they all pay. time for this bad man vibe. Hummus for the hotties, give it to me one more time for this bad man vibe.
For generations, men and women alike have searched for plants or food, powders or potions that could turn up the heat. One food type prevailed. This week on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, we ask, are oysters actually an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that answers the mysteries of the world in 15 or so minutes.
Have you ever wondered if time travel is possible?
Or if alternate realities exist?
Are micro-pigs actually tiny pigs?
If you've wondered the answer to any of those questions, then good news, you've come to the right place. We have answered all of those, and we are about to answer one more.
So step into the shower with us as we answer the big question, are oysters an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Before we go in deep asking questions about oysters, there is something about oysters that I am absolutely sure of.
Oh yeah, what's that?
That they are disgusting.
Do you know what? You can stop right there and get off the oyster-hating train. Oysters are great. I love oysters. And do you know what? I think it's one of those things that, like, as you grow up and you stop being afraid of oysters, that's the sign of you being a good person.
What is it about them that you like? Like, I feel like anybody who likes oysters
loves oysters. Good. You know, it's like, granted, they're like snotty little slime salt monsters.
Do they not just taste like seawater to you?
No, like that's when you get that finesse. You drink the liquor of the oyster, and you get a little bit of salt. You get a bit of umami. You get those kind of like those mineral notes. You know, I had an oyster recently where the oyster where it was farmed was near an offflow from a bog. So, like, you could actually taste a kind of woodiness to it. Oh, it was amazing.
And do you just swallow them down in one, or do you chew them?
I kind of swirl them a little bit, swish them.
But you don't chew. You don't bite them.
You can chew.
But you don't.
I do, sometimes.
Okay.
It depends on the oyster. Like, if I'm getting something like a native, like a smaller oyster, then I will. But then if I'm having a gigas or like a Dungarvan special, then those are huge. I mean, those, like, I've had those, like, they're the size of the palm of your hand.
Yeah,
you can't. you're not gonna chew that, you know. But also, like, yeah, it's like I enjoy it. I didn't always enjoy oysters. I didn't. Like, the first time I ever had an oyster, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I remember watching my parents.
That just says a lot about Marcus's upbringing, doesn't it? At four or five years old, I was eating like sausages wrapped up in a slice of white bread, and Marcus was having oysters.
I remember we were in Ballybunion, which is like, it was on the west coast of Ireland, and I remember seeing my parents eat oysters, and I was a kid. I was like, ah! I'm half French as well, for any new listeners.
So you were like, oh!
Yeah. I was like, oh! No, like, I was a little French kid being like, maman, papa, oysters, please! Because I wanted to be like my parents, and I tried my first oyster and I vomited everywhere in the restaurant.
I can imagine what that vomit looked like. Snot.
It just looked like one oyster.
Oh,
and
God.
Whatever, like the chips I'd had for lunch.
Anyway. Love them or loathe them, it's been an urban myth for generations that they are in fact an aphrodisiac.
An aphrodisiac, for those of you who don't know, is something that turns up the heat, heightens your sexual desires, and brings the hubba hubba. Basically something that makes you horny.
Marcus knows this, but it's always been a dream of mine to open a corn shack.
So what's a corn shack? Just like, paint a visual picture for us here.
Okay, like a stall that sells nothing but corn with all sorts of toppings. And I want to call the stall either Corn Hub or So Corny. Corny, corny, corny.
Do you know what, Taz? That's the wonderful thing about 2019. Like, today, you're a podcast producer. Tomorrow, you could be a corn shack entrepreneur. God knows what you could be in 10 years' time.
Keep the dream alive, baby.
Keep that dream alive.
Anyway, I far prefer to be talking about corn on this whole episode, but instead, we've got to talk about oysters.
So, just to kind of go back to zero, like, what is the actual definition for an oyster? Like, it's not a fish. Does it fall like, is it the first cousin of a clam?
Oyster is the common name for a number of different families of saltwater bivalve mollusks that live in marine or brackish habitats. In some species, the valves are highly calcified and many are somewhat irregular in shape.
Okay. Do you know what? There's actually an ongoing debate at the moment on whether oysters are vegan.
Why is that?
So a lot.
Yeah, why is that actually?
So a lot of people are vegan for the reason that, like, you know, intensive meat farming is very damaging to the environment. Whereas oyster farming, because they are saltwater bivalve mollusks, is actually really good for the environment. Oysters are filter feeders. So you can put them anywhere. They're very cheap to consume. Or very cheap to produce. You can put them anywhere and they will actually clean the water of wherever they are put. Also, when it comes to consumption, oysters don't have a central nervous system, so they have no consciences and they don't feel a thing. They're
so
also,
that is kind of like the parameters of being vegan or vegetarian. It's a central nervous system.
Nothing suffers.
Okay.
It's good for the environment and they're a really, really excellent source of protein.
Interesting. The only problem is they're disgusting.
I think they're deadly.
Anyway,
you're just a coward.
Okay, let's get back to the beginning of where this whole theory began.
Can I actually, just before you say anything, Taz and I once went on a date and I ordered some oysters and it was quite early in our relationship and she tried one and couldn't swallow it she kept it in her mouth for, I'm going to say, like 5 minutes until eventually she had to spit it into the shell and put it back upside down into the ice.
Not my brightest moment.
It's okay. Let's go back, right back to the beginning. Like, where does this theory of oysters making you horny all begin? Like, how far back does it go?
Oysters have been a reputed aphrodisiac at least since the Roman Empire and supposedly were regularly enjoyed as a virility booster by Casanova, an Enlightenment era polymath who lived from about 1725 to 1798. Casanova became best known for having seduced more than 100 women, described at length in his memoir, and his secret va-va-voom may have been from oysters.
I'd love to read that memoir. It's like, how are you? My name's Casanova. I eat oysters and ride a load of women. Go on, Casanova. Good man. So historically, we know that oysters have been enjoyed since the 1700s and may have been considered an aphrodisiac back then. But has there been any real research into the orgasmic properties of this saltwater bivalve mollusk since then?
Well, since Casanova, people believe it to be a bit of an urban myth, but then in 2005, the idea that an oyster is an aphrodisiac got a huge boost. So around this time, many consumer publications reported the bivalve mollusks, which include clams, oysters, mussels and scallops, have been found to have desire-inducing properties.
And which publications are these? Are they like Horny Oyster Monthly or are they actual credible sources?
They're actually credible sources. So the stories came out of a presentation at the American Chemical Society by George Fisher. I love that his name is George Fisher.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, mm-hmm. Bad joke. George Fisher is a professor of chemistry at Miami's Barry University. Fisher and some colleagues discovered that mussels contained the amino acid D-aspartic acid,
right,
which has been found to increase the level of sex hormones in lab rats. Even though the study did not involve oysters exactly, Fisher was quoted in a number of publications speculating that perhaps the amino acid could contribute to the aphrodisiac effect.
So I've never ever heard of a D-aspartic acid, but what exactly is its effect on humans? Like, does it inflate the balloon?
The effect of D-aspartic acid in humans is still being studied. It may increase testosterone in sedentary men, but what it can do beyond that is not exactly clear. According to a 2015 study published in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition.
Ah, okay, so it increases the testosterone. That makes sense. But like, there are other supplements and food types known to boost testosterone production. Why is it only the oyster that's a link to affecting sex drive?
Michael Kreichman, a sexual medicine gynecologist and counsellor at the Southern Californian Center for Sexual Health and Survivorship Medicine in Newport Beach, California, whoa, that's a mouthful, has attempted to gather the available scientific evidence on so-called aphrodisiacs. And he thinks that people are really suffering in silence and kind of looking for good information and there just isn't a lot out there.
So basically people are kind of clutching at straws.
In a 2015 paper in the journal Sexual Medicine Review, Kreichman found the risks of many substances people use to stimulate desire far outweigh any potential benefits,
okay, right,
of which he found very, very little. Oysters are, of course, safe to consume, but here's the crux of it. No scientific studies have been conducted to show they can stimulate desire. The bivalves do contain zinc, which has been found to be an essential nutrient for testosterone production and spermatogenesis, he wrote in a paper. They also contain specific amino acids, which you talked about earlier, and serotonin, which are integral in the neutral path of the pleasure response, according to Kreichmann. But these minerals and chemicals are also found in countless other food types. So it's hard to say that solely an oyster is an aphrodisiac.
So it's basically, it's kind of based on the placebo effect and Casanova spreading rumours.
That's exactly it. And Kreichmann actually talks about this, saying the challenge with studying oysters' potential impact on desire is that there is a very large placebo effect.
The placebo effect being, just for anybody who doesn't know, when people experience a benefit or change from an inactive supplement. Basically, the power of the mind.
Yeah, so basically when people are told that there is a change happening in their body and it's basically a lie, and they believe it to be happening because...
When a placebo group in any kind of medical study are generally given sugar pills, and it's seeing if there's any noticeable difference in their conditions or behaviours as opposed to the people given the actual control substance.
Yeah, and it actually a lot of the time shows up a positive result. But if his patients ask about oysters, he tells them there is limited data to support their use. But, adds Kreichmann, if they like having oysters and it makes them feel better, then why the hell not?
Has anyone other than Kreichmann studied this? Like, this is what I love about In the Show. You find people who've dedicated their lives to like one little specific mad thing, like do oysters wet the lettuce? You know, like it's kind of...
Okay, so I found another chap to have studied this, a guy called Barry Orr Komisaruk, a professor of psychology at Rutgers University in Newark. And he says that he knows of no data proving that oysters have an aphrodisiac effect. So far, no one has discovered any substance that can truly turn on desire, says Barry, who studies the neural pathways involved in sex and is the co-author of The Science of Orgasm.
So this guy spent his whole life researching the science of an orgasm.
I know.
Fair play.
I wonder, was there any practical experiments?
I'm sure there was. So he hasn't found any substance at all which can truly turn on desire. Like, he hasn't found that mythical kind of love potion. Has he found anything that actually affects a person's sex drives?
Some recreational drugs, like marijuana, can intensify the sexual response, he says. But that's not true for everyone. According to the University of California, Santa Barbara, which maintains a sexual health and information website based on scientific findings, marijuana can lead to heightened arousal, but it can also impair performance and lower inhibitions, leading to riskier sexual activity, according to the site.
So again, no real clear-cut proof on this one. Anything else that can affect the sex drive at all?
Alcohol can facilitate sex because it lowers inhibitions, but as Shakespeare noted in Macbeth, alcohol provokes the desires, but it takes away the performance. Pharmaceuticals like Viagra and Levitra add potency to sexual desire, but, adds Komisaruk, only if the desire is already there. So the likes of Viagra can aid sex, but only if the desire is there. Desire, Komisaruk says, is a very tricky issue. It's complicated and nobody really understands it very well.
So to kind of wrap things up, oysters might turn you on, but if they do, so might another whole host of food types and substances, right?
Yeah, so there is like, there has been a bit of science carried out on this, and there are things in oysters, there are amino acids and a whole host of other things that can kind of aid in sexual desire, but an oyster solely is not this be-all and end-all aphrodisiac that contains any abnormal things than any other food types that can aid desire as well.
Do you know what? I still love oysters and I'm still going to eat oysters. And who knows if that will do anything to me, but I love them regardless.
In the show with Tazimarcus, 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 in the show with Tazimarcus.
Well, there you have it, guys. If oysters turn you on, then continue to eat the oysters, but there may not be any scientific proof that they are the aphrodisiac they promise to be.
Just don't be a shellfish lover.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Show with Taz and Marcus. We hope you've learned something. And if you want to learn more weird, random and wonderful facts, then good news, there are over 75 episodes of In the Show with Taz and Marcus that are ready for your waiting ears. We answer all types of questions in 15 or so minutes. You can download them, listen to them in bulk, listen to them on your commute, when you're exercising, when you're cooking, wherever you so please. But if you listen to them, you will be a more interesting dinner party guest.
And don't we all want to be a more interesting dinner party guest? If you have a question that you'd like to hear answered on In the Show with Taz and Marcus, it couldn't be easier to get it in front of our eyes. You can email us on
InTheShowerPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can get in touch with us on Facebook by looking up In the Show with Taz and Marcus. Or you can get us on Instagram or Twitter at InTheShowerPod.
If you want to get in contact and just say that you listened to the podcast, we would really, really, really love that. All you listeners are invisible to us. So when we get an email from someone just saying that they've enjoyed the episode, then it really, really does make a huge difference to our days.
As ever, and a lot of you do send us pictures of your pets, but we can always take more.
If you've liked this episode, then please do share it to all your friends and family, anybody that you may think will enjoy it.
That's how podcasts spread, and we'd really, really appreciate it.
The debunking doesn't stop here. Next week, we're going to tackle a whole new question, and I'm excited for us.
This question comes from Sean McCardle, and he asks us, where do humans actually sit on the food chain?
I'm so excited for that one. That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
In the show with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the show with Taz and Marcus.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
We are Jitensha.
And you're listening to the New Spins Library
on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Every time I make an excuse, I feel the rope tighten my neck like a noose. Pace back and forth, circle the truth, reflect on my life as a youth. Wait, take a few steps back, let's get loose. If you need evidence, here's the proof. Thoughts been sinking, my shit's been leaking, but I stay buoyant, keep on keeping. Fucking what girls, I be TLC creeping. Honestly, honesty's just an option, a thin red line of separation. Your emotion, my opinion, cross the threshold and keep your mind open. Let it go even if your heart's still frozen. Broke myself so I can't be broken. Don't be mad cause I might be chosen. Don't be mad cause I caught you posing. I might be a problem, probably nothing. Having a nightmare, wake up dreaming. Nights would stay in the evening. Everything can't be even Stevens. Like you weren't always for the win. Like you would never cheat for your kin. Well, in the end, in the end. Why are you tripping the next man? Why are you out on the streets, angry and yelling? End of the day, we all know that you're bluffing. End of the day, I'm trying to make something. End of your wave, but I'm still surfing. Stuck on the beach, yeah, you're hurting. Stick to your word, now you start running. Caught the last chick slipping, sprinting in the opposite direction of her intentions. Practice forgiveness, but learn my lessons. Takes many shapes, but it's all a blessing. Take a few puffs of the joint I'm burning. Take a few dabs off the rig I'm bunning. Give you that innocent, ooey bubbling. Straight and narrow, now I'm stumbling. Back to basics, back to business. I never forgot them. Back to the fact that money can't solve your problems. Well, okay, not all, just most of them. Income don't match motivation. Take my art to a new elevation. Can't sell my soul, but I'll give you an organ. Pull my heart through my abdomen. If that's the price of admission, hand with a fist, that's quite a bargain. Think you're hungry? Well, I'm starving. Think you're hungry? Well, I'm starving. Like, hey, I can feel a new sensation. Hey, I can feel the earth's rotation. But don't mean shit if there's no good reason. If there's no good reason, it don't mean shit. There's no good reason. No, 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 it don't. It don't.
Well, that wraps it up for the New Spins Library on CKUT. Remember to keep listening to playlists and interviews on YouTube by typing the New Spins Library into the search bar of YouTube. Listen back on CKUT.ca. We'll be back next week. Terminal 5 and The Sleepy King are up next.